Blog Talk Radio.
Goodstone, licensed mental health counselor, spiritual relationship healer, and somatic body psychotherapist, helping men and women heal their bodies and their relationships through love. Author of the book Love Me, Touch Me, Heal Me, and the romantic novel Love in the Blizzard of Life, and creator of the life-changing 30-day love challenge. This show is all about living your dreams, fulfilling your life purpose, and creating and sustaining love and health and total well-being for the rest of your life, no matter what age you are right now. In every episode, I speak with vibrant, exciting, and positive men and women who are proving that life can and often does get better and better as we reach our 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and beyond. Today, I am speaking with Lynn Cockrum Murphy, an intuitive consultant specializing in helping people move forward on their spiritual path. She channels, offers theta healing, readings, access bars, and facilitates physical healing, emotional growth, and removes blocks to a life of joy, meaning, and purpose. Lynn received her bachelor's degree from the University of Nevada, master's degree from the University of Oregon, and her doctorate from Arizona State University. She's a certified theta healer and instructor, a certified access consciousness bars healer and instructor, a channel, a licensed substance abuse counselor since 2003, adjunct university professor, meditation instructor, and a best-selling author. Her recently released second book, Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind, available through Amazon, describes the trauma of her childhood and how she moved beyond the dysfunction through seeking a life of spirituality and inner peace. She also teaches how you can do that too. Lynn has led group meditations and taught throughout the Northwest, Southwest, and Caribbean. She has a private practice in the Phoenix, Scottsdale, Arizona area. And her website is lynncockrum-murphy.com, and it is on the Blog Talk Radio webpage. So I'd like to welcome you, Lynn Cockrum Murphy.
Thank you so much. I'm really excited to be here with you, Erica.
So I look forward to hearing so much about your story. So if you could tell us about the series of heart-wrenching traumas, not to focus on them, that you had in your early childhood that could have caused you to be depressed and rage, suicidal, or just totally drop out of society like many people do. But you chose a spiritual path and being of service to the world. So my question is, well, tell us about all this, but how did you become so wise and centered?
Gosh, that is a good question. I think it's years, decades of perseverance. I think it's having a spiritual practice, a daily spiritual practice, and that I had a faith that life could be better than it was when I was younger. And I had a faith that there was something greater than me that cared, that if I sought that, I could achieve some kind of peace, something that I saw other people having.
Wow.
When you talk about what happened, do you want me to explain a little bit about that?
Sure, just share a little bit about what happened. You know, what kind of trauma did you experience?
Well, the first one was the house fire. I was 2.5 years old. in Northern California, furnace exploded. My dad carried me out as the house was on fire, and the front of me had gotten burned. I did a regression once, and I have a memory of standing in the crib, holding the rail and just screaming, and that my throat was burning. That would be probably from the smoke. Anyway, so he carried me out. He went in to rescue my sisters, ages 6 and 8, and was unable to get them. So they died in the house, and he died in the hospital, and shortly thereafter. And I lived in the hospital for a while, recovering from those burns. My mother's response to that was first to go to the church, and apparently that didn't give her the comfort she needed. So she went to alcohol, and that was the beginning of all that drinking. Then she remarried when I was 4, and he was emotionally abusive, verbally abusive. They had my sister, who was a great gift in my life, wonderful person. I was molested by a male relative, not that stepfather, somebody else in the family, when I was 6. When I was 9, that stepdad died in a logging accident. And so our life went into, you know, turmoil again. Then she remarried a year later to a man who had a serious drinking problem. And life became really rocky at that point. I mean, it had been rocky before. Now it was different kind of rocky. There was physical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse of my mom. I was molested again by a different relative, not either my stepdad's. And let's see. Then, because of all that victimization, I did have a victim attitude for quite a while. So my teen years were, you know, me setting myself up for dangerous situations and I love that phrase, looking for love in all the wrong places.
Mm-hmm.
So until I reached, until I stepped on my spiritual path, and I started as a teenager reading everything from Alan Watts to psychologists, looking for answers. Then at 17, I became a Buddhist. I moved into the Buddhist chapter house at 18 and started studying. And I think the reason that happened and what was so satisfying about it is I saw my family. They had taken me to a lot of different kinds of churches, and they didn't go to church themselves, most of them. Most of them went to the bar. And so I saw what they told me to do didn't work for them. So that's why I went looking for, well, my God, what does work? There's got to be something. And so when I heard about Buddhism, I checked that out. And that was the kind of Buddhism where you chant. So I still have that as a tool, and it's one of the tools I talk about in the book. Then after that, I graduated from college, and I started studying with some metaphysical Christians. And moved into a commune in Oregon. This is in 75, I think. And, 1980, sorry. And lived with them and studied with them for years. And those things really made a difference in shifting my mind from victim to more empowered. The next thing that happened was my parents bought a bar, and I remember saying to them, are you kidding me? Don't you realize you have a drinking problem? Can you see where this is headed? And it didn't quite turn out like I thought it was going to. Dad, it was robbed within months, and my mother was shot and killed. So that was the end of all the trauma and drama that started my life. And it really was. It was rough. So
it's
since then,
amazing what you went through. I mean, most people have one trauma and they can't recover from it.
I think that people really do experience a lot. You know, maybe there are some people that don't, but everything from car accidents to getting fired to losing a sibling to cancer. There's so much that goes on in life. One of the reasons I wanted to write this book is to talk about what helps. I talk about PTSD and depression in the book because it's pretty rampant in our country. And PTSD beyond our soldiers, because our soldiers struggle with that. But so does the person who, I looked up some statistics on it. It's like 7% of the population has PTSD. It's like 8 million Americans. And
I realized something pretty recently. I've spoken to some emergency response people that
yes.
come in. They're the first people that come in and see some horrific things.
Yes.
And they have to handle it. And they don't talk to anyone about it. They just sit with it. And police and firemen. There's
mm-hmm.
a lot of people that see lots of trauma regularly. And they feel it.
They sure do. And usually those kinds of agencies have support services for their client, for their employees, but the employee has to take advantage of it. Otherwise, they just suffer in silence. That's a scary
place
to be.
One of the things is they don't even realize they're suffering. You know, they bracket it. You see this thing, you feel this thing, and you kind of push
mm-hmm.
it down,
mm-hmm.
and you don't
mm-hmm.
talk about it. But it
mm-hmm.
stays in your body and in your
you
mind.
Know, that reminds me of that premise in, they talk about in Al-Anon, that you're taught to don't talk about it, don't tell anybody, I can't remember what, but anyway, to keep secrets, to not bring stuff up, the elephant in the room. And I think doing the opposite is exactly what works. Questioning things, not accepting pat answers, and just like, you know, I just mentioned sexual abuse. And I think that we're moving into a beautiful era when we are no longer keeping the secrets and we are telling the truth. From Anita Hill talking about sexual harassment at work to actresses who've come forth and said what their lives were like. Absolutely. I think it's time for a change, and we're moving that way.
True. Well, I know that Buddhism talks about suffering and says that suffering is inevitable and we should just accept it. So tell us what your views on suffering are. You've said a few different things about it.
I guess I'm not willing to just live with that. And so my spiritual practice continues with daily meditation, chanting when I wish to, and using the theta state in meditation so that I can have a more peaceful life. Because I think Buddha also taught that seek enlightenment. That's the only way out of suffering. And I found along the way that it got better and better and better. And I used therapists. I used journaling. I used 12-step programs. Autobiography, the concept of surrender. I use study, such as learning about the law of cause and effect. I use other people as teachers and continued moving closer to that power, that thing that is greater than me, to find a better life. And it's so doable. It's so doable. My life is so good.
So much
now.
Available. But as you said, people do have to take advantage of what's out there.
Yes, yes. And I think when people are depressed, they don't, you know, they can't do much. So that's why at the back of the book, Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind, at the back of the book is a list of things to try. And if you just do one a day, you can say, I did something today. I moved forward. And you can feel good about that.
Well, you say that suffering has a purpose and that it's an illusion. I'd love you to explain that.
Mm-hmm. For me, this purpose of suffering was to get my attention. And eventually it turned to where I have a very low tolerance for misery. So when I get into that state, whether it's my viewpoint or events, because it can be either way, it can be all in my head, or it can be the loss of someone you care about. So when I get to that state, I get motivated to, okay, what tools do I need to use now? Do I want to call someone and just talk? Do I want to journal it out? I want to ask my husband for a hug as soon as he gets home from work? There's so many things that make a little difference. Getting out in nature, going for a walk, and meditation, journaling, chanting. So many ways to get out of that.
So you're saying that the purpose of suffering is to get your attention?
That's how I use it. I think the purpose of it is something that we've created. I think that's pretty metaphysical or based on the belief in reincarnation and multiple lives, that we're souls that go on and on and on and have all these experiences. I think that life on Earth means suffering. And my choice to deal with that is to choose growth and change and the processes that bring peace. So someone might interpret it differently, but that's how I see it. You know how when you're off course and you get a little nudge, you're off course, and then you get a bigger nudge. And then finally, if you don't do something, you get a 2x4 upside the head kind of
right.
thing. Right. So I think that's what I'm talking about. It's that kind of a motivator. You can take action before it's the 2x4. And then you brought up suffering is an illusion. And that is because I also have the spiritual belief that all of this, all of life, is a creation for our experience, that we are sparks of God and we are God experiencing itself here on earth. And when you study Hinduism and Buddhism, they say that there's a level of awareness, of consciousness, that exists where all form, all matter, and all states of mind and personality are just dissolve. And so that's what I'm talking about there. It's not that the suffering is an illusion for most of us, but when you go deeper, and that's, for me, it's through the years of meditation, that there's so much inner peace available, there is no suffering. And by meditating all these years, I can go there immediately. I mean, just in this conversation, as it slows down and I focus on that, it just shifts. Anybody can have that. I'm not special in that way. That's why there's a gazillion meditation teachers out there.
Well, and what comes to mind is the Course in Miracles, where each lesson is talking about how everything is an illusion. And then in the Hindu philosophy, they have a word, maya, meaning illusion. So
right. How
can others change their life experience of suffering to realize the illusion of life? What would it take?
I would find someone whose teachings call you and feel really positive and enhance you. There are a lot of spiritual teachers out there that are pretty mixed, and then there are others that are pretty great. And so I would find the teacher or teachings that call me. You can search the internet and find a lot. I'm surprised at how many great people there are here in town, some of whom I've studied with for a while. I also don't think that you have to stay with any one path. Just because you were born Catholic, you can be Catholic plus. And just because you studied Buddhism doesn't mean that you always have to be a Buddhist. Whatever it is that helps you grow and expand and increase your awareness, that's what matters.
Wow, very helpful. So tell us about some of your healing techniques. One of them you talk about is theta healing.
Mm-hmm. Theta healing starts with going up to the, or we call it going up to the theta state, but really it's switching your brain waves to the theta state consciously. I think that it's interesting. One of the reasons that this appeals to me so much is that when I taught meditation for so many years, I only taught people to go to the alpha state, and that was mm-hmm. okay for then. But then when I learned about the theta state, that's what the more advanced, like monks who've meditated for decades, they're always in the theta state. And so that's what that is. I teach people how to do that easily, quickly. Then from that state, there are particular kinds of prayers that are very effective. So just like in psychology where you identify limiting beliefs, we also identify, as theta healers, identify limiting beliefs and from the theta state pray to have them removed. It's a much faster process than therapy. I don't go to therapists anymore. I use theta healing. The other thing we can do is ask for downloads. If a person, for instance, hasn't experienced unconditional love or joy, we can pray from the theta state and ask Creator to give that to that person right now, to give them Creator's perspective on that. And then from there, it's up to the person to allow that into their life and to experience it. So we do those kinds of things.
I would like to put something in here, that when you said you don't go to therapists anymore, not everyone is ready to let go of the traumas, even if they have a beautiful experience. They will, you know, not access it unless they have spent the time really focusing on early childhood or whatever the issues were, talking about it, you know, and getting down to the truth about it and then being ready.
Yes.
So
oh,
I think
it's absolutely
readiness to really benefit from the work that you're doing.
And I think the book talks about all these different tools that I used, and therapy definitely was one of them. It's just that right now I have enough connection within myself, and I've had so much support over the years that I can take care of myself. But it wasn't that way at one time. And I needed a therapist to tell me really clearly that the abuse I experienced wasn't my responsibility. It was on those people who did that. But also to help me move beyond that victim mentality so I didn't have that sense of powerlessness that is so uncomfortable.
Well, all right, and also tell us about the access consciousness bar, what that is and how you treat
access consciousness is a fairly new, like just 20-something years, spiritual teaching, and it's very unorthodox. The healing methodology that they have is called access bars, and it's holding a series of 23 different points on the head, and it causes things to automatically release, things that the person is ready to release. So it's a touch healing technique and amazingly effective in creating more inner peace and releasing old burdens and bonds. So I offer my clients both of those. And then because of my counseling license, you know, I use those skills that you learn in your training to assist my clients also. But I also use prayer and do readings and channeling whenever it's appropriate.
So how did
you
develop the skills in the reading and being intuitive and channeling? Tell us about that. How did that come about?
I think the intuition was something that existed in my mother. When I look back, I can see that she had some of those traits, and that developed in me over time. I was fascinated in that stuff as a kid, but it took me a long time to develop it myself and then to realize that I had it. So I went to a metaphysical church when I lived in Oregon for a couple of years, and they had classes in channeling and all that. And that's where I had some experiences prior to that, but that's where it really developed. I even teach these kinds of things in my theta healing classes. I don't teach channeling, but I teach the ability to be intuitive and to bring that forward. And people, it's amazing to watch them. People who didn't think they were intuitive within a day are able to give readings and healings and see the future. It's pretty cool. Watch those eyes light up.
Well, it is possible. I know many years ago I took the S training, and toward the end, at some point, we sat and someone just gave us the name and location of someone, and we could pretty accurately predict what was going on with that person. It was,
isn't that amazing?
We know much more than we realize we know when we tune in.
In fact, most people disregard that stuff, play it down, but it is just part of us. And I think we often ignore it. I don't know if you did this, but we did this as teenagers. When the phone would ring, we would try to guess who it was before you picked it up.
Funny.
Yeah, and the more you did it, the more accurate you got. Yeah, so there are a lot of ways to develop it. That was just one of the fun things we did. I do like, though, always focusing on my spiritual connection, because with that I get joy, I get peace, I get a sense of someone cares. No matter what state the world is in, I am cared for. Isn't that a great place to live from?
Yes. And to realize there's something bigger, you know, more powerful than this little momentary issue that we're dealing with.
And then that also brings up, you know, that study of the law of cause and effect, because it was like, why, books have been written on this, why do bad things happen to good people? You know, I needed answers.
So this leads to a good point where I'd like to ask you, you've written a second book, but why don't you tell us about the first book, the current book, and then the one that's in the process.
Okay. The first book was actually my dissertation from college. It was about resilience, and it included my own story. So it was looking at, obviously I'm resilient. That, what is that? And is that something we can give to children?
Mm-hmm.
Then Living Hope, Steps to Leaving Suffering Behind is my current book. And it has my story in it, but it's really full of tools and how to get out of the view of the victim, how to move beyond karma, and how to make life pretty satisfying.
Mm-hmm.
The new book should be out by summer, May, June, and it's called The Mystery of My Unfolding Self. And it is, thank you, it is just talking about spiritual journey. Because I can read about Christ, I can read about Buddha, or more recent people like Yogananda or Swami Rama. And yet those people are not as ordinary as I see myself. And I thought maybe it would be helpful to put another book out there with what spiritual development is and progress is for the more average American. So maybe that will be useful to others.
Wow, that's beautiful. I love the title of it.
Thank you.
We all want to know about our unfolding self.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think everything that I've written has some psychology in it, because psychology explains a lot of things, but it also has spirituality, because I think through our intuitive gifts, through our pure hearts, we connect with something greater than ourselves, and there's a lot of knowing, a lot of insight that comes with that.
So, do you have some kind of message, something you can tell our listeners that might help them to get started in this unfolding of themselves?
Two things. One is, if you choose to get the book, it's on Amazon, or you can get it through my website, thelynncockrum-murphy.com. If you choose to get that, try the things that are in there and allow yourself to be moved forward. You'll hear a lot of things in there that will give you suggestions and ideas. And just pick the ones that work for you. Secondly, I see all of us as light, as spirit or life force. And I encourage people to be the shining being that they already are, to recognize that in themselves and allow that to come forth, because there is that beauty, that godness already in every single one of the listeners today.
That's beautiful. And tell us your website, even though it's listed on the page.
The one for the book is lynncockrum-murphy.com. The other one for my business is desertjewel.org. And that one talks about my classes and the services that I offer and so on. I can work with people over the phone or over Skype and in person. So desertjewel.org is that one. And I encourage people to pick up the book and email me through either of those websites and let me know what they think. I would love to hear.
Well, it has been wonderful speaking with you. Thank you.
Erica, thank you so much. You opened the door. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. I am your host, Dr. Erica Goodstone, saying goodbye for now. Please visit my website, healthybabyboomersnetwork.com, to get your free report, How to Live to 100 and Beyond and Be Healthy and Happy. If you're ready for love, join the 30-Day Love Challenge, which will be available around Valentine's Day. You can click the link in the right column at my other website, drericagoodstone.com. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.